Hello and welcome to another episode of Boundless Body Radio. I'm your host, Casey Ruff, and today we have another awesome guest to introduce to you now. Danny Dreyer is the co-founder and president of Qi Running and Qi Walking, revolutionary forms of moving that blend the subtle inner focuses of Tai Chi with running and walking. He has written several books, but is best known for his first book, Qi Running, a revolutionary approach to effortless, injury-free running. After writing that book in 2004, he went on to teach his methods to thousands of people and has appeared on several TV programs and presentation stages. Danny has lived a lifestyle based on holistic living, meditation, healthy eating, and personal wellness for 45 years. You can find him and his work at qirunning.com. Danny, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the show.
Hey, Casey, thanks a lot for having me.
Absolutely. I purchased your book over a decade ago. I was doing a lot more running then than I am now, but your book was highly influential and really changed the way that I think about running myself. If you ever see me running, you better start running too, because something bad is going down. Get out of there. But you can do it efficiently, which is great. It's also been something we've used with our clients quite a bit. We train several runners and triathletes and things like that. And it's been really influential. So I thank you for your work and thank you for coming on to spend some time with us today.
Good. Well, thank you for passing it on to your clients too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Before we get going, sometimes I'll ask this question of our guests because we've got a lot of guests that are just killing it in life and they are fit and they are energetic and they are kind and giving and optimistic. And my argument is let's just throw away all of the science, forget any of the science, forget anything that you've learned and studied over the course of your life. Why would I not just look at you and the life you've lived and how awesome you make life look and say, I'm just going to do whatever this guy does and that can be the end of it?
It'd be nice if you could just look at me and that would be the end of it. But it takes work. I got to where I'm at because I'm very careful about how I approach life. And I also, have guidelines that I use
that work for me.
That's awesome. And that's a part of what I've taught through my running classes. And also, I've taught it through other lectures and things like that, that it's more than running. Running is just kind of, I tell people, it's just a vehicle for all the other stuff to open up. Mm. And you could use running, you could use walking, you could use, almost anything, pinball, it's all in your approach. So that's what I'm really trying to teach people is what's underneath all of that.
That's super interesting because when I think back those, 13 years ago when I bought your book for the first time, I would have said, hey, this is a running book. This book is about running. Maybe right. It has a little bit to do with Tai Chi, but it is a running book, period. And now when I read it, I see what you're saying. Like that bleeds in. Those principles bleed into any activity you do.
Yeah. One of my favorite lines to tell people who, like you, have come to me and said, I've been doing this for 13 years. And I've also told it to people who I've had, I hold week-long workshops. We used to before COVID anyway. And by the end of the week, and sometimes people like you who've been around a long time, I always tell them, I say, it's not about the running. And they all shake their head and go, absolutely right. it is, I tricked you into this new way of life through running. And now you're on your own, but you've found that it's just not about the running.
Yeah, absolutely. So we often have this idea that East is East and West is West. And the two kind of philosophies, if you will, or ways of living don't really collide that often. They kind of are at odds with each other, it seems like. So yeah. I would love to hear your story, how you figured out how to blend these two together and explain like what actually is Qi? What is that?
Okay. Well, I'll start with really my perceptions before I ran into Qi. And that was, quite a few years ago when I started my own spiritual practice. I noticed that was back in the 60s and the early 70s when all these gurus were coming over from India and trying to teach us how to sit still. Right, basically. That's when the TM movement started, transcendental meditation. A lot of famous Indian yogis were here trying to teach us Westerners about internal work. Okay. Westerners are all externally focused. How fast can I get? How big can my muscles get? How handsome can I look? You know, on and on. And the East is all about internal work, like how godly can I actually live, you know? And the problem was, is that the two didn't really mesh because nobody was teaching people in the West really. So you're not going to get somebody from the West to just stop. That's not going to work. Never has. But what the people from the East taught us how to do was to maintain some internal sense of quiet and silence within the midst of activity. And that's a subject that not many people were doing, you know, and they still, not many people do that. You know, they don't teach you, they teach you either how to meditate and sit still, or they teach you how to burn calories, you know, and get strong. But there's no combination of the two still. And what Tai Chi does, it's a martial art that started in China centuries ago. And what it does is it actually turns movement into a type of meditation where you're constantly present, and you get present by just sensing your body. Just what's happening in my body? Where's my balance? Where am I misusing energy? Where am I holding tension? How am I breathing? It's all about, it's like a lifelong study of what your relationship to your body is. It's not the relationship of, are my muscles big enough? Do I look good when I walk into the room? It's not that. It's all about, how do I feel in my body? And so Tai Chi is a martial art, and it was invented as self-defense and to use against, you know, people that had weapons, maybe and maybe not. But it's a self-defense. In order to be really good at it, you have to be very sensitive to what's going on in your body, and you have to learn to be very sensitive to what's going on in your environment. And you have to learn how to respond to each one in the best way. So that you don't waste your energy and you don't lose your life. Yeah. You know? So it really trains you to be more aware of internal things and external things. And that's basically, and Tai Chi is all around based on the being able to create a flow of energy through your body. And if you do that well, and you keep your body aligned, and you keep your body relaxed, and you keep your mind focused, then you will have higher odds of beating your opponent than somebody who doesn't have that. And your opponent could be anything from another person to a hill you got to climb. And so how you respond to that hill, how you respond to that opponent, depends very much on how well you know yourself and how you can respond accordingly.
Now, for you in your life, you discovered running first, correct? And then you discovered Tai Chi?
Yeah, I did. I'd been a runner for, 25 years before I studied Tai Chi.
Wow.
And now I've been studying Tai Chi for 22 years or something like that.
Wow.
And it has completely, like with you, the Qi Running Book with you, like me, learning Tai Chi has completely rocked my life. You know, there's like Pandora's box. There's no going back. You know, I know too much at this point.
Wow. Yeah, that's super interesting. So running for you was a way to leverage more Qi in your life. And you came up with a system called Qi Running. Can you describe what exactly that means?
Okay. So when I was doing running before I learned Tai Chi, I was doing the muscular art of running, I'll call it, you know, learn how to be strong. You train hard, long hours, lots of miles. I trained for ultra marathons and, I did Leadville, which is a 100-mile race in Colorado.
Yeah,
and
brutal.
The whole thing is over 10,000 feet. So you have to really train hard for that. So I physically trained hard for, for like 3 years before then. And how I did Leadville was by being highly trained. Okay. After that, I started really taking, ultra running seriously. I moved out from Colorado to California, where I got into a race series, and I had to be better at consistent performance. And just before I left Colorado, I met a guy who was a Tai Chi instructor from China. And so he was kind of the real deal. And I learned from him, And when I started applying, I was already an ultra runner by then. And so I was used to running long miles. But, you know, when once I started applying some of the principles that I was getting from this Tai Chi instructor, principles like how to relax your muscles, how to use less muscle, how to align your body so that you're not wasting your motion, all kinds of things like that, how to use gravity as a friend, how to cooperate with the force of your opponent. All of these principles that Tai Chi is founded on, I started applying them to my running. And all of a sudden, man, that completely rocked my boat. I've never been the same runner since. And I could feel the difference the very first time I tried it. In fact, I remember the experience. I was out for a 3-mile run. And I went out for a run and I was playing with these different focuses that I was experimenting with. And after 3 miles, I came back and I felt myself and I said, God, I feel like I was cheating. I don't feel like I even went out for a run. What is this? Mm. You know, what's going on? And so that started my curiosity. So I really tried to focus on what I was doing and exactly how it applied to my running. And I experimented and some things worked and some things didn't work. But generally speaking, when I really used the focuses from Tai Chi accurately and applied them well at certain places in my running, across the board, my running got better. Mm. And so when I did move to California and got on this ultra series, that's when I started running lots of ultras. I ended up running 43 ultras and, wow. And I finished in the top third in every one of them except three.
Wow.
So something was working, you know, and I would finish my races. I'd finish my runs, but I would definitely be aware that when I finished my races, there was no soreness afterwards and no recovery time. That's when I really started going, wow, there really is something to this. I'm not actually doing anything when I'm out there running, or I would be tired and sore, right? You know, I just had a workout, you know? Wow. And so, you know, and that's the real different approach that I'm taking. So a lot of people now, when they go out to do a workout, if they're not, you know, wheezing and lying flat on the ground afterwards and sore as hell for the next 3 days, they don't feel like they got a workout.
That's right.
Well, I disagree that that's the way you need to feel more physically fit.
Wow.
You know?
Well, there's so much wisdom in what you just said. And I think that's why it short circuits our brains over here on the West. Like we are striving and pushing and driving and competing versus what you're describing sounds so much more of a Taoist principle where you're allowing things to happen. You don't do anything and nothing is undone, kind of a thing. Like you're working with the forces rather than just trying to fight them all the time. It seems like such an easier, more simple and more, I guess a better way to create and cooperate with nature rather than fight against it.
Exactly. And you used the key word, which is a very difficult word for Westerners to swallow. And that word is allow, you know. We're just not used to allowing.
That's right.
If we got used to allowing, we would have a different political system. If we were used to allowing, we wouldn't have wars. That's if we right. had, you know, if we learned to allow, you know, all kinds of things would be different in our lives.
Way different. Totally agree.
And so we're just not used to what is this? What do you mean allow? You mean I actually let something happen as it should? Well, allowing is creating the conditions for things to happen more correctly, and then stepping aside and actually allowing them to happen. Mm. You know what I mean? So a big part of what I try to train people to do is to set up the conditions for nature to take over, you know, for external forces to power you, for you not to have to do all the work. You just set up the conditions for work to happen. And you don't end up working any harder than you need to.
Wow.
For anything.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. It is so counterintuitive and hard to kind of appreciate
completely.
That. Yeah, it's tough. Yeah. Tough to feel.
Very counterintuitive.
Yeah, yeah. We just want to control everything all the time. And then when something doesn't meet whatever your expectation was of a run, of life, of whatever, take your pick. Like, we get all upset about it. And it's like, you could have just enjoyed it. Just surf. Like, so much easier.
Yeah, and you can even look at it philosophically. Anytime you try to control something, it has limited outcome.
That's right.
Because you're controlling what happens, you know? I mean, and that outcome is limited to your knowledge, to how much you allow, right? And so if you just leave that allowance kind of open-ended, then whatever is allowed to happen can happen. But it doesn't mean you don't have any say in the setup.
Right.
Now, that's different. That's different. Right. You know, it's no accident that I run faster when I do the right things. Yeah. I do the setup and I make sure that's working. And then I let go. Everything else just kind of takes over.
Mm-hmm. That's so well explained. I love that. Let's talk a little bit about the mechanics. Maybe we could start at like the heel, like maybe the difference between how, you know, somebody before they start working with you would normally run. You've already kind of alluded to it, but you know, we can start with the foot strike or the heel versus what you found and what you learned as a better way, a more efficient way to run.
Yeah. So by now, a lot of people tend to already know that if you strike with your heel, it's not good. So there's a number of reasons why it's not good. And one of the main reasons is that if you heel strike, it usually means that your heel is touching the ground in front of your body. It means you're overstriding. It means you're reaching with your legs, which is what most people do. Westerners do. They accomplish by reaching, by throwing, by, you know, jumping, diving. Everything is forward, right? Well, that's not really cooperating with forces of nature. What it does is, if you are heel striking, then every time your heel hits the ground out in front of you, you're putting the brakes on. Period. There's no, you look, ask a physicist, you know, there's no other way around it. If you touch the ground in front of your center of mass, this is just straight science. You touch the ground in front of your center of mass and you're moving forward, that will create a deceleration, a braking force to your forward momentum. Okay, so that's half of it. If you strike with your heel and the road, so look at it this way. If I talk about it from a Tai Chi perspective, a Tai Chi practitioner always tries to cooperate with the forces at hand, okay? So if somebody's trying to punch me in the face, I want to cooperate with that punch. I don't want to let the guy punch me in the face, but how I cooperate is as he's swinging towards me, I move with the direction his punch is going. I mean, you see Muhammad Ali do that all the time, you know, when he was a fighter. You know, somebody's swinging him, his head would go backwards,
right?
So if my body is moving in the same direction as an oncoming force and at the same speed, then what does that do to that force? Okay, yeah, think about it. It zeroes out the force because the force is not hitting anything, right? Mm. So it has no net effect on my body, okay? So let's transfer that into your running, okay? So this means as soon as you start moving in any direction, there's the ground beneath you is moving exactly in the opposite direction towards you, right? Okay, it's all relative science. So as soon as I'm moving, you know, doing a 10 minute per mile pace in one direction, there's a 10 minute per mile road coming at me, you know?
Yep.
And so what I want to do is cooperate with that 10 mile an hour road coming at me. I want to cooperate with that. How would I do that? The last thing I would do is throw my foot out into that force, right? That's like, that's doubling the force that I hit the ground with, right? Mm-hmm. There's already a force behind the road and then I swing my foot into it. Wow, you know? So what I want to do is I want to, as soon as my foot hits the ground, I want to have my foot moving with the road, not against the road, but with the road. As soon as I touch the ground, my foot moves with the road. Okay, so in order to do that, I have to actually make sure that I'm not landing on my heel, that I land more midfoot, that I land with my knee bent. If my leg is straightened out way out in front of me, as soon as it hits, that impact is going to be driven right into my heel, up my leg to my ankle, maybe to my knees, which could be weak, maybe into my quads, making me have sore quads by the end of my run, maybe into my hips or my low back, right? Whichever point in my body is a weak spot, that force is going to reside. It's going to stop at one of those places, you know? And so my response to that external environment, this comes from Tai Chi. You want to respond to your opponent. My opponent is the road. And so as my foot hits the ground, I want it to move with the road. So I relax my legs and allow the road to just sweep my leg out from under me. Okay. So then there's no force going into the road. I'm cooperating with that oncoming force. So actually, the road is moving my leg for me. I don't have to push my body forward because I'm cooperating with another force of nature. And that force is gravity, right? Mm-hmm. If gravity wants to pull me down, I position my body to pull me. That's why I have a slight forward fall. It's like a tree falling, you know? The tree falls, gravity is pulling it down. As soon as the center of mass of that tree is anywhere other than directly over its point of contact, then gravity is going to pull down somewhere else and the tree is going to fall, right? Mm-hmm. And if you ever walk past a tree that's fallen in the forest, the tree will almost never be right next to its trunk. The tree will be some distance away from the trunk because it creates forward momentum as it falls. Okay, so then so if gravity wants to pull me, I just fall into it. Okay, so gravity is pulling me forward. That's my propulsion. What's making my legs move is the road moving underneath me. The road is moving my legs for me. And so as long as I can keep myself balanced in this nice little window of balance that's not too far forward, because if I'm falling at too steep of an angle, I'm going to hit the ground harder with my legs. If I run too upright, then I'm not cooperating with the pull of gravity. I'm actually working against it, and I have to push myself with my legs. That creates more work as well. Mm. Either way, I create more work because I'm resisting impact, or I create more work for myself because I'm pushing myself around. Whereas if I balance myself in this nice little forward fall, then all I have to do is use the number of muscles it takes to just balance myself. That's way less than self-propulsion, I'll call it. Wow. Right? So I'm sure when you were a kid, you probably tried this thing where you got a broom and you try to balance it on your hand, right? Yep. You put the broomstick in your hand and you balance the broom. Well, what happened if you wanted to walk while you were doing that? If you wanted to walk forward while you're doing that, you had to allow the broom to slightly fall forward, right? And then you had to walk as fast as it was falling forward. And then the broom would stay up and it would fall forward and everything was like it should be. If you walked faster than the broom, it would fall back over your shoulder, right? Yep. If you didn't walk fast enough, it was going to tip over in front of you and hit the ground. It's a balancing act, right? Balancing is much easier to accomplish on the human body because it takes much less muscle to do than propulsion or impact. Mm. Okay.
Yeah. If the pendulum is not moving too far one way or the other, it rests in the center and is perfectly balanced. It sounds like that's what you're seeking.
Yes.
The tree example, I think, is fantastic. And I want to jump in and make a point here. A tree has a strong trunk. Let me repeat that. A tree has a strong trunk. So I hear people sometimes throwing around the term mobility and stability like they're the same thing, but they're different and you need those in different places in the body. So can you tell us the importance of a strong trunk?
Well, the principle from Tai Chi, I'll try to answer your questions in terms of Tai Chi because those are the guys that make the rules. Right. And they're good rules to follow. So I'm going to follow them.
Perfect.
So one of the principles from Tai Chi is maintaining, whenever you're moving, maintaining a balance between alignment and relaxation. They're two totally different things. Balance between alignment and relaxation. Body alignment is posture. you know, if you have good posture. And that applies to any sport. And even when you're not in a sport, you should have good posture. If you have good posture, then your body is actually aligned in the way, the best way it can be to move. All right. So there's alignment. But then if you're standing still, you're standing up tall. And if you have good posture, your body frame, if you have good alignment, your skeleton is supporting your body, not your muscles. Your muscles just work a tiny little bit to keep your skeleton aligned, but it's your bones that hold up your body weight. Okay. Bones don't burn calories. You know, bones don't require fuel. Bones don't require recovery. You know, muscles do, because you have to pump blood through them. Okay. Bones don't. And so alignment is really important, because if you can get your body weight to rest on your structure, you use a lot less energy to do whatever you're doing. Okay. Now, so there's alignment and relaxation. So when you want to move this structure, it's important that there is no resistance in that structure to movement. So if I decide to walk, but I hold a lot of tension in my shoulders, or I clench my glutes, or my calves are always firing, that's muscle tension. And any muscle tension is going to restrict your movement. Any muscle tension is going to restrict your movement. Mm-hmm. You hold tension, you're not going to be as fast or as quick. You know, you watch sprinters as they get ready to do their sprint. Let's say it's 100 meters. Watch them around the starting blocks. You know, they're jumping around, they're shaking their bodies out, or swimmers too. You know,
all these guys are just like Phelps.
Yeah, Michael Phelps, look at him. He's just totally shaking his arms out. He's going to be like Gumby when he jumps off the blocks, right? Yep. Okay. So he wants his moving parts as relaxed as he can possibly get them. But you watch when he goes into the water, his body is like an arrow going through, you know. He wants to be as aligned as a dolphin, which is the most efficient swimmer in the world, okay? The dolphin is got his body aligned with the direction he's headed. He doesn't have wasted side-to-side motion up and down, none of that stuff. And so if you're going to be a runner or a walker, either one, you don't want to, if you're moving in a certain direction, you want to make sure that everything in you is guiding itself in the direction you're headed, and there's no tension resisting that motion. So alignment takes on kind of two flavors. There's the alignment, the body alignment of supporting your body weight, right? That's important. Your structure supports your body weight. That saves energy. But there's also alignment in the direction you're headed. So if you are running or walking or swimming in a certain direction, the least amount of side to side or up and down motion you can create, the more efficient you become, right? So you see, remember the movie Rocky, right? When he was running all over Philadelphia, his upper body was totally swaying side to side. He looked like a bulldog, right? You know, if I'm trying to go forward and my upper body is going left and right, then left and right, I'm using about twice as much energy to get where I'm going as I need to. I don't need to go back and forth. Mm. Some people bounce when they run. They go up and down, right? You know, any misalignment in your body is going to create you to be less efficient than you could be. And so a lot of the Qi running focuses are about body alignment and body relaxation. So you want to have your trunk aligned, but the moving parts, your shoulders, arms, hips, and ankles need to be like as soft as you can make them. Mm. You know, in Tai Chi, it's a principle they call, they have great graphic names for principles. They have a principle called needle in cotton. So you got to think about whenever you're moving your body and running, walking, swimming, golf, whatever you do, that think about a ball of cotton, fluffy ball of cotton with a needle going right down through the center. That needle is your postural alignment. Okay. The cotton, so the postural alignment is your trunk, and combined with the support that your legs provide, the bones. Okay, that's your structure. The cotton is the moving parts. So the cotton means that's how soft your your muscles need to be in order to move efficiently. And that principle alone, alignment and relaxation, are run through and through not only Tai Chi, but Chinese philosophy. You've heard of yin and yang. Yin is this gathering force, right? It's a collective force. That's your posture line is yin. But the flip side of that coin, not the opposite, but the flip side of that coin is yang, which is expansiveness, openness, looseness, you know? So you keep them both going at the same time. And that's what people don't really understand in doing their workouts and running in events or things like that. They, you know, like the more tired somebody gets towards the end of a race, the more they start losing that structure. Yep. You've seen people like slumped over, bent at the waist, breathing hard, you know, they're all over the place. They lose their structure. So the important part is to just train your body to have really good alignment, postural alignment and directional alignment. Mm. And then also the moving parts need to be loose so they can move easily.
That's very well explained. I always feel a little bad for the photographers that are at mile 24, 25 of a race and hope there's not competition, another photographer at mile two, because the photographer at mile two is going to sell more photos for sure.
Exactly. And the people love the pictures at the start of the race and they hate it when somebody takes a picture of them going across the finish line and they look like they might as well have been carried in a body bag, you know?
Totally. That's great. I really love that you made that point about keeping things aligned and moving towards your goal. I see that in ice hockey a lot too, where people swing their arms side to side as they're trying to skate forward. And you talk so much about the alignment of the feet and the knees and the eyes are forward and this beautiful, efficient arm swing. Can you tell me a little bit about the arm swing and its importance?
Oh, the arm swing is totally crucial because you know what happens? It balances out the movement of your lower body. And I realized pretty early on in my running that nobody ever talks about arm swing, you know, and here it is, one of the most important pieces to running technique or walking technique or cross-country skiing, golf, whatever you want to call it. The upper body is really, really important. And in certain sports, the upper body plays a major part, and certain sports, the lower body plays a major part. But if you really want to be the most efficient athlete, then your whole body has to participate to the extent that each part contributes. So in your arm swing, your legs are swinging, try to run sometime without swinging your arms. And then that'll get you tired really quick. And then try running by just pumping your arms while a lot of people run. And then try and feel, just always feel in your body, what is this doing? I want to feel what it feels like. Am I getting more tired or less tired? Am I going faster, easier, or am I getting faster and it's hard? And then try swinging your arms without pumping your arms, but just bending them and letting them swing. I propose that that's the easiest way to swing your arms is to not pump them, because when you pump them, what does it do? Again, you're moving something up and down, your hands, moving them up and down. That's going to cost you energy. Mm. If you pump your arms, that's an isotonic exercise. Flexion, extension, right? If you bend your arms and hold them bent, that's an isometric exercise. You bend it once, done. Then you just swing it. Once it's bent, you just swing it.
No wasted movement.
No wasted movement. Much less energy expenditure. What happens is that you use your arms to, what I do is I tell people, use your arms as a counterbalance for your forward fall. So in like most runners, they swing their arms forward. That's why they overstride. Okay. Instead, try swinging your arms, try falling forward, but swinging your elbows rearward to counterbalance. So then you can find that balance, little, you know, delicate balance point that I was talking about, where you're not too far forward and you're not too upright.
I love that.
But you need a counterbalance.
That makes so much sense. And We have to talk about this. I mean, this is an episode all in its own. We could talk about this for hours, but
we could do 10 episodes.
Absolutely. We did an entire episode, our second episode with Dr. Cucuzella. He wrote Run for Your Life, and we did an entire episode all about the feet and the importance of the feet and the structure of the feet. And you and I are talking about balance, and it sure seems like if I'm wearing a shoe that is pitching me forward that has an elevated heel, I'm going to have a very difficult time achieving that balance. And Dr. Cucuzella used the term, if you don't make your shoes look like your feet, you're going to make your feet look like your shoes. And I thought that was very helpful. And you have an awesome example in your book where you were buying some shoes. I believe in California.
yeah,
can you San tell Francisco. That? So good. Yeah. In San Francisco. It's a great,
that was a great story. I was in Chinatown and I was doing Tai Chi. So I wanted to go buy a pair of real Tai Chi shoes. I was always just using, you know, beachcomber shoes or something with no sole. And so I went into a store that sold these Tai Chi shoes, and there's this old lady behind the counter. And so I walked into the store and I said, "Do you have some Tai Chi shoes?" And she came out from behind the counter and looked at me. And the first thing she did was look down at my feet, and I had running shoes on. And she looked at me, and the first thing out of her mouth, she said, "I don't know why you guys wear those shoes that make your feet stupid."
So good.
It was priceless.
So good.
So yeah, since then I've realized, you know, and there's been a lot of people who have studied, you know, barefoot running and stuff like that. And I've followed their examples of having a shoe that doesn't work against you. Again, you want to make sure your equipment doesn't control how you run. So the least amount of shoe, the better. But I will put a qualifier with that. If you're not used to running in those shoes, you can try them, but you have to take your time working into those shoes. And your body doesn't change overnight and everything like that. But I will also digress just a little bit and tell you that I was teaching once in Washington, D.C., teaching a chi running class. And Mark Cucuzella was in the class.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, he comes up to me because he's from, you know, Harper's Ferry, which is right outside of D.C. Yeah, and so he'd heard about chi running, so he came to the class. He came to the class because he was just about to get surgery on his toes because he was always a kind of a power runner and long distance runner, and he was fast. I mean, he's done a ton of like sub-2:45 marathons, like a lot for many years, but it was ruining his feet because he was powering too much. And so he took this class, and after the class, he totally noticed the difference, because instead of toeing off, I told him, just pick your feet up and fall instead of, you know, taking it all out on your feet. Wow. He liked it so much that he actually signed up and went through our instructor training course, and he took that. So a lot of the information, and he was really about to give up running because his feet hurt so bad.
Yeah, that's right. We talked all about that.
Yeah. So he went to this class and the instructor training class, went all through it. And then he never got certified as an instructor because he realized, because he's a doctor, first of all, and he realized that he could pitch this on his own. And this, which is what he's done. And he's a good friend. And, he, you know, I said, there's nothing I can do about that, you know? And so I just want people to know that, you know, a lot of, and Mark Cucuzella wasn't a teacher, a running instructor, until after he came to the chi running classes, learned a bunch of ways to do it differently, and then went off as a proponent of, you know, paying attention to your running form.
Okay. That, and so that is crazy full circle, because I'm sitting here doing this interview in my Vivo Barefoots that I bought from his running store that sells minimalist footwear. So
exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, that's just an interesting side story to that.
That's great.
It's just, he had not even thought about, you know, approaching different running differently or teaching running until he came across chi running.
Wow. That's so cool. That's so cool.
Anyway, the shoes are really crucial, really important. You don't want overbuilt shoes. You don't want shoes that, again, It's just like the principle of alignment and relaxation. You want to have shoes that work for you, but don't make you less efficient. Mm. And shoes that don't act like they're part of your foot make you less efficient. So let's say, for instance, you have a really stiff shoe. That stiff shoe, as you roll over from your support stance into your propulsion stance, which is for most people, if that shoe is stiff, it's going to throw you onto your forefoot. It's going to force you onto your forefoot because the forefoot won't bend, right? So if you imagine being in stiff shoes, then as soon as you roll over that foot, you have to fire your calves. And think about your calves as some of the smallest muscles in your leg. And you don't want to be propelling yourself forward with the smallest muscles of your leg. That's not what they were designed for, right? So one thing I want people to realize is that whether you're doing weight training, whether you're doing, you know, pull-ups or running or walking or anything, you have to understand how the body is designed and work with that design accordingly. So here's the little quick lesson on the human body. The largest, strongest muscles in the body are in your core, in the center of your body, the main part of your body, right? As you get more distal, as you get further away from that place on your body, all of the muscles gradually get smaller and smaller and smaller till you get into your arms and legs, you get towards your real periphery, and the muscles are tiny, okay? They just get gradually smaller and smaller through your arms and through your legs. So everybody has a body, and I don't think anybody's built like Popeye, you know, so they don't have bigger forearms than biceps. And so you have to understand that you can, and this comes right out of Tai Chi. Tai Chi is set up in a very Marxist way. The body is set up in a very Marxist way, from each according to its ability, right? That's a good Marxist slogan. Mm,
yeah.
From each according to its ability. All right. So if you have a big muscle, you can require a lot of strength from it. If you have a little muscle, not so much. You have to be careful not asking too much of the smaller and smaller and smaller muscles. So if you look at running, where do most of the running injuries happen? Most, I would say 95%, that's a high percentage, 95% of all running injuries happen from the knees on down. You know, runner's knee, calf pulls, Achilles tendon problems, plantar fasciitis, you know, Morton's neuroma, I could go on and on, you know, shin splints, it's all below the knee.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Right. All of those are the smallest muscles in your legs. Mm. People are relying on toeing off, on sprinting forward or landing hard with their leg out in front of them. All that stuff overworks those little tiny muscles that don't really deserve the work you're giving to them. You know, they can never really operate efficiently if they're always being overused. Mm. And they really risk danger of being injured.
That's
so,
such a good point.
Yeah, but change the workload to your core muscles. And so there are ways to do that. And some of it takes more skill. I teach some of it in the classes that I teach. And but it's not very common advice. I will say that. You know, people think your core is just to support your torso. Good enough. Done. You know? No. I disagree. You know? There's a lot your torso can do.
It's so obvious, but it's like hidden in plain sight almost. It's so overlooked or underappreciated. I'm really glad you brought that point up because I heard you say that recently and that was like, whoa, I guess I never really considered that, but that makes perfect sense. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. You have to follow the structure of the body or you're going to hurt the body. Mm, yep. See, simple rule, really
100%.
Simple rule.
100%. Yeah. Well, you'll love this. Since me and my wife go on a lot of walks, we'll often choose surfaces like grass or like, you know, trails where possible. And whenever we come up on a field of these like smooth stones or bumps or kind of halfway frozen earth, we just like look at each other and go, yes, this is going to feel so good on our feet. And that foot intelligence, when you divorce yourself from those foot coffin shoes and you start feeling the ground, your feet get intelligent. That is very literal. It's
absolutely
not figuratively. You glom the ground. It feels so different.
Yeah. it innervates, you know, there's more nerve endings in the bottom of your feet than most of the places in your body. And it extends the nerve systems in your feet so you can actually feel the earth more. Now, that not only allows you to respond to the earth more quickly. So if it's an uneven surface, your feet think faster, right? Because they can feel the surface and they relay that to the brain. The brain shoots back a message, yes, relax a little more so you don't get bruised on these stones. And they educate you how to move because they're constantly giving you input into what you're going over. In China, and I've been there a few times, they make whole sidewalks out of pebbles, river pebbles that are, you know, the kinds that are about like 2 inches across or inch and a half across. And yes. They embed them in concrete. And people walk up and down those things like all day. It's crazy. And they do it to keep their feet awake.
That's amazing.
Their feet alive. They're excruciating. You know, they're really hard to do, but everybody does that. But they also don't have such a thing as plantar fasciitis in their country. You know, it doesn't happen.
Yep. Wow. So important. You talk a lot about breathing techniques in your book. And I just wanted to have you talk a little bit about what things you're proponents of. We could talk about nose breathing forever. We practice a lot of, mouth taping and nose breathing techniques and things like that. And boy, what a difference that makes.
Yeah. In fact, I want to make sure that I, give a plug to the person who's really promoted this, Patrick McEwen, who wrote the book called The Oxygen Advantage. And he's just now come out with a new book called The Breathing Cure, something like that. He's incredible. He's got all the science behind him. He was taught by a guy who really spent his life studying breathing. And it's really good. It's called The Oxygen Advantage. And he's the one that's gotten everybody to tape their mouths, to do nose breathing instead of mouth breathing. And it's a really important thing to pay attention to. And I'll tell you why. It's because when you breathe through your mouth, it sets your nervous, your body. When you breathe through your mouth, your body thinks that you are in an emergency situation. Because if you've ever watched a sprinter run, their mouths are wide open. Right? They have to breathe through the mouth. They need to get a lot of air in really quickly because they're literally running for their lives, right? The tiger is chasing you out on the savannah in West Africa. You better run fast and you don't worry about nose breathing.
Highly anaerobic, burning lots of sugar, glycogen as fuel.
Just absolutely. You're not worried about whether you're an efficient runner or not.
Not at all.
Better than being somebody's dinner, right? So that mouth breathing sets up the sympathetic nervous system, right? And the sympathetic nervous system, when it kicks in, it starts shooting adrenaline through your body and cortisol, all those emergency hormones. So you can respond to an emergency. Okay, so it sends your blood pressure up, it sends your pulse up, it burns all your glycogen, does all these things. But if you just are a normal person going around mouth breathing, you're going around in an emergency situation. Your body thinks that, you tricked your body into thinking we're more danger than it is. Okay. So you always go, that's why people are so uptight. They think they're in an emergency situation. And I would probably believe that it's because a lot of people are mouth breathing. On the other hand, if you breathe through your nose and only through your nose, then that triggers the parasympathetic nervous system when you nose breathe. Now, if anybody's ever taken a meditation class or a yoga class or anything like that, you always do these breathing exercises before you start where you close your mouth and you close one nostril and breathe in and then breathe out on the other nostril and breathe in through that, and breathe out on the other nostril. It's called pranayama, okay? It's been around for thousands of years, nose breathing. And what it does is a number of things. When I said it sets up the parasympathetic nervous system, yes, then you get serotonin, you get all these cool endorphins, you get all these hormones that relax your body. And the reason why is because when you breathe in through your nose, the air passes over all these little cilia, these hairs that line your sinus passages. Well, on the other side of those little hairs are nerve endings that go directly to your brain and create lower brain waves. And not everybody knows that. Okay. But that's why you do it before you meditate, because you want to settle your brain before you sit down to be quiet. Okay. So imagine if you were to settle your brain down while you were running. Wow. What a concept. Okay. And then not only that, but your body is producing all these nice relaxing hormones. And not only that, but as you breathe through your nose, in your upper palate, your body produces nitric oxide. It's a gas. Okay. Nitric oxide is a vasodilator, which means if you breathe it, your blood vessels expand. So what that means, of course, is that your blood flows easier because it's got a bigger pipe to go through, right? That's all from breathing in through your nose. And so, yeah. So what I do is I make the best of both worlds, and I breathe in through my nose and out through my mouth. Because if I breathe out through my mouth, I'm not getting rid of any of that nitric oxide. If I breathe out through my nose, I am. So I want to make best use of an in-breath. I want to breathe in all that nitric oxide so that my blood vessels can expand, and I want to expel the oxygen through my mouth.
I love that.
Yeah. And, you know, people don't realize that, you know, the harder you breathe and the more you breathe through your mouth, the more carbon dioxide you expel. And then you go into oxygen debt. Not because you're not breathing in enough, it's because you're breathing out too much carbon dioxide. And carbon dioxide is the chemical that transports, that's the molecule that transports oxygen through your system and delivers it to your muscles. It's like the mass transit system, okay? You want to get oxygen to your muscles, you have to have carbon dioxide in your system. And that carries oxygen. If you breathe out all of your carbon dioxide, the bus has left the stop. You know, it's not carrying anything. So the harder you breathe, the harder you breathe.
Mm. Yeah, we used to use metabolic analyzers that would analyze oxygen and carbon dioxide in and out, and it was so obvious. You could see that all the time. Super interesting. We have talked a lot about balance, physical right. balance in a run, emotional balance, spiritual balance. I want to talk about you and your life and what other things that you do personally that help to keep that balance in your life.
Oh, that's a good question. And I do quite a few things. I regulate my sleep, for one thing. I try to go to sleep at the same time every night. If I can, I try to sleep the same number of hours. That helps. Any regularity in that, any cyclical regularity is really good for you. When I start my day, the first thing I do is a sitting meditation. So that starts my mind off relaxed and clear. Okay. And before I go to bed at night, another sleep habit, I cut the screens by 8 o'clock. So I'm not in front of, you know, screens, which activates your brain. And then before I go to sleep, I try to feel for any daily disturbances that I'm still carrying. And I try to really just allow them to be there. I don't fight them. And I don't try to figure them out. I just let them know that I'm there with them. They can just hang out. I'll work with them when I can. Mm. Okay. And the other thing, so then in the morning when I wake up, I'll just go through a day. It's really easier that way. And so when I wake up in the morning, I do my meditation. I do some stretching. I don't do stretching with my running. I just do stretching on my own. And it helps me in my Tai Chi. It helps me in my running. But I don't necessarily do it before I go out to run. So after I do my meditation and some stretching, I will go to do my exercise. Sometimes it's swimming. Sometimes it's running. Sometimes it's hiking. And I have a dog, so I always have to walk my dog. So that's a guarantee.
Great.
and then here's one thing that's really important. I've lived by this for I can't even remember how long, but I weigh myself every morning. Hmm. I do a weigh-in, and I have a digital scale, so I know exactly what I weigh. It's not one of these ones with a needle. It kind of goes some way and kind of doesn't. You know?
Right.
But I weigh myself every day, and if I get to a point. My average weight is 145 pounds. I'm 5'7". Okay. If I don't worry about getting below that, because I rarely do. And, but that's my best running weight and workout rate. I don't feel like I'm overworking when I'm carrying that weight. If after the holidays, if I might gain 3 pounds, even up to 5 pounds after like really, you know, eating all kinds of stuff through the holidays. But if I ever even get close to 150, I stop myself in my tracks. I go, something has to change. We're not going past that number. I don't care what has to happen. Wow. We're not crossing that line.
Tight window.
That has worked. Yeah, tight window. And so that's why I, you know, I haven't gained weight over the years. And most people do. I think the average is to gain, after 45, you gain a pound a year. Mm. I've heard doctors say that. So I weigh in and I maintain that weight. And I try to do what I can to just, you know, eat a little lighter the next day, bring it back down, whatever. Okay. And then, so then that's my weigh in. So then I go into my day, I do my exercise. When I get back from my exercise, when I eat, I only eat 2 meals a day. I have kind of a late breakfast, you know, like 11 o'clock, and I have my dinner at about 5:30, and that's it. Okay. So I'm not overworking my body by putting too much food into it. And, you know, I have my day kind of planned out, and I do try to keep a to-do list for the day, but I don't put more than 10 things on it. And I know there's A types out there that are going to say, you're kidding me, you know? No, but I do 10 things. And if I complete everything on that list, I'm fine adding more after I finish my list. Mm. But you don't put 20 things on your list, get to 5 of them and beat yourself up for the rest of the day.
That's great advice.
Okay. So that's another one. In terms of when I eat, I don't stick to a really strict diet. I eat meat about once a month. I have fish about once a week, and I have chicken maybe once a week. But most of the time I have vegetables and nuts and, you know, legumes and grains and all that kind of stuff. I try to stay away from carbs. I don't eat flour. I don't eat dairy. I do eat dairy. I love cheese. Don't take my cheese away from me, because you know, take anything but not my cheese. But I don't do milk or creamy, you know, cream or half and half, any of that stuff. I do almond milk if I drink milk. Okay. So, and then, like I said, I get by with 2 meals. I go light on my carbs. I really keep a mind on how much my sugar intake is. And I rarely eat flour.
That's
I just noticed that I feel better when I'm not eating a lot of sugar, and I feel a lot better when I'm not eating flour. Mm. Okay. And then when I think of my physical exercise during the day, I would say the main focus that I do, and this applies not only to my physical exercise, but the whole rest of my day, is the skill of body sensing. And I talk about that in the book, the Qi running book and the Qi walking book, body sensing. If you don't have that skill, you are dead in the water. Mm. You don't know how to sense your body. When am I overworking? When am I underworking? When am I breathing too hard? Where am I holding tension? That's all body sensing. So body sensing is really learning how to set up a communication link between your body and your mind. Okay. It's not mind over body. That's where people get into trouble. It's mind with body. So you need to listen to what your body is telling you. Sometimes I wake up and I ask myself, wow, how far do you feel like going today? And my body will say, forget it. We're not even going out today. It's not happening, dude. You know? And then there's some days I wake up and say, how far could you go? And my body goes, oh, I could do 5 miles pretty easy. And then I have a long run, you know, every weekend. But I listen to my body. If I'm out on a run and something's not feeling right, or I'm feeling really wiped out, I take it easy. If I'm out running and for some reason I get really tired going up a hill, I will stop and walk. I'm not one of those guys that's just going to macho it up the hill. You know, I don't care what you say, you know, we're going up this hill. You know, I don't do that, because that's how people get hurt. Wow. So I try to make my approach to exercise mindful, not just physical, but really listening to my body. So if there's any advice I could drop to your listeners, I would say, learn how to listen to your body. And then the next step of that is learning how to respond to what you're hearing. There's the artwork is right there.
Wow. That is such great advice and so important. And again, in our culture and society where we're just pushing and pushing and pushing all the time, to listen, to tune in, to respect our body and respect the workloads and respond accordingly, I think is so important. You do such a good job talking about that in your book. There's so many life lessons that extend past Tai Chi or running, all kinds of great stuff. I have a copy of your book right next to me. I just bought this. It's the revised and updated edition. This is meant for a giveaway. So we're going to give this away to somebody so that we can share your work around and continue to promote and your amazing work. We're just so grateful for you and for you and your time and for coming on today. Where can people find you?
They can find me just by going to the chirunning.com website. That's chirunning.com. And you can get a hold of me through the website. Generally speaking, if people have personal questions, they go through the person that monitors the website. If people want private coaching sessions, there is a way to find those on the website too, because I do those. I do virtual coaching sessions. And for people who want to come to Asheville, which is where I live, I do in-person sessions. So either one. But I don't travel and teach anymore until COVID's done.
Mm. Well, that's awesome. It looks like you have no signs of slowing down when that happens. Your website is full of great information. It was really easy to get a hold of you to set this up. You were so kind and again, giving with your time and information. So we just really appreciate it. We hope the listener really goes there and takes advantage of that, because there's a lot of great stuff, whether or not they do coaching or not. There's tons of free resources there that you put out. And it's really great.
And I just, my whole goal is to just make people take on a truly holistic, healthy lifestyle, not just healthy lifestyle where they have the hard body.
That's beautiful. Yeah, we love that. Danny Dreyer, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. And thank you very much.
Yeah, you're certainly welcome.
And this has been another episode of Boundless Body Radio.